across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue, and welcome back to Up North News Radio for this Friday morning. It's October 20th. What do we have for days today here? World Osteoporosis Day, International Chef's Day. Oh, I like this. Information Overload Day. It says, put away those devices, except the one you're reading right now, of course. It's National Day of Writing, National Mammography Day. We've talked about breast cancer awareness this week. So that and a few birthdays that we covered in our last hour, all for this October 20th. Coming up this hour, in just a few minutes, we will talk to the fifth Democratic candidate to enter the race for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. All five say they are going to seek the Democratic nomination to challenge Republican Derek Van Orden next year. We'll talk to Eric Wilson of Eau Claire about why he's running, about his background, and about what's going to be one of the most highly watched races in the country. Because if we've learned nothing else from the gridlock in the vote for Speaker of the House, it's that these kinds of margins, with these kinds of margins, paper-thin margins, every seat counts. And many of these seats are unattainable by one party or the other because of gerrymandering. So the districts that are competitive, like the 3rd District here in Wisconsin, a lot of folks come in and watch it or put in resources or volunteer and try to help voters understand just how valuable their vote is. At the bottom of the hour, we will take a look at this week's media coverage of national and international news with Mark Jacob. And then Dan Schumacher's off this week. Jimmy Koska will be in to get a set for the first round of the WIAA high school football playoffs, getting underway today and this evening. Along the way, you can reach out to us at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. You can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And again, you can always subscribe to the Up North News daily newsletter. Go to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner of our homepage, and become a regular daily subscriber to that. All right, let's unpack the news a little bit here, starting with, well, this isn't the world's biggest headline, but I did miss one birthday in the last segment, as Roger was quick to remind me. And Roger's always been quick on the Hee-Haw references, and he noted that Grandpa Jones from Hee-Haw, the banjo player, was born on this day in 1913. You are absolutely right, Roger. I looked it up, and I glossed right over that and didn't mean to, so thank you for pointing that out. Looking at arguably some bigger headlines for today, jury selection begins today for the trial of Trump attorney Kenneth Chesbrough, the Wisconsin native who asked for a speedy trial. And so unless he takes a plea deal before the trial starts on Monday, this trial will be the first extensive look at the evidence that Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis and her team have amassed against not only Chesbrough, but former President Donald Trump. Now, Chesbrough and two other of the 19 total defendants asked for speedy trials, but two of them have now copped plea deals, including the big surprise from yesterday, and that was attorney Sidney Powell. She was supposed to go on trial with Chesbrough, but now has pleaded guilty to reduced charges in exchange for her cooperation, talking about what she and Chesbrough and Trump and others did in terms of illegally scheming to overturn the 2020 election results in the state of Georgia. And that's an important thing to note here, that this is a Georgia case. There is still the federal case that's out there that special counsel Jack Smith is doing as well. And that's because our elections are very much decentralized. And so you have states that can bring charges based on a state-by-state basis. Another example of which is the fake electors. So let's head over to Michigan for a moment, where a Michigan Republican accused of participating in the fake elector plot had all criminal charges dropped Thursday after he and the Michigan Attorney General reached a cooperation deal. There are 16 defendants there in all who are facing 8 criminal charges, including multiple counts of forgery, after investigators say the group met following the 2020 presidential election and signed a document falsely stating that they were the state's duly elected and qualified electors, which they are not. And as you know, we had the exact same thing happen here in Wisconsin with fake electors. State Attorney General Josh Call has said that he cannot and will not say if there is an active case right now dealing with the fake electors. He had strongly urged that the U.S. Department of Justice might want to pursue this case either alongside or perhaps instead of the Wisconsin Department of Justice. So we're all still kind of in the dark as far as where things stand with the Wisconsin fake electors, except I will note again that one of those fake electors, Bob Spindell, is a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And that Senate Republicans and leader Devin Lemahieu, knowing he was a fake elector, still reappointed him to his seat on the Wisconsin Elections Commission. So he's still there, but Senate Republicans this week fired one of the Democratic members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission simply because they could. Let's take a break here. We're going to get our full forecast from Weatherology for the weekend just ahead. And then we're going to talk to Eric Wilson, candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. Still a lot coming up here on this Friday morning. When you're here, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin this morning, you're up north. We'll be right back. All right, we'll put off the sports talk until a little bit later on this hour when Jimmy Koska joins us. The WIAA State High School Football Playoffs begin today with the Level 1 round, and so Jimmy's going to tell us all about that. And then we'll get to the baseball playoffs, some of the Badger teams, the Packers, of course, playing this Sunday as well. 7 o'clock temperatures around the state. Well, in our last hour, they ranged from 38 to 50. But now this hour, all the temperatures are in the 40s. Lake Wissota here at 42 degrees. Madison, 48. Waukesha, 48 as well. La Crosse is at 41 degrees. Wausau, 47. Wisconsin Rapids, you're at 44 degrees. Green Bay, 49. And Hayward, 41 degrees right now. Jennifer Wojcicki, meteorologist from Weatherology, joins us now to tell us more about what we can expect today and into the weekend. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it does look like a dry day for everyone today until a chance for some rain showers for most tonight. Sunny skies expected for most, a little bit more cloud cover expected around Wisconsin Rapids and Wausau. Highs looking to get into the upper 50s to low 60s, which is pretty average for this time of the year. For Saturday, at least a slight chance for showers for central Wisconsin and eastward, Oshkosh, Waukesha, and Milwaukee. Partly sunny skies expected for everyone else, mid to upper 50s for the southern half of the state, mid to low 50s for central to west central Wisconsin. On Sunday, it looks like sunny skies across the board. Some areas of frost potentially in the morning for parts of southern and central Wisconsin. Highs lingering in the mid to low 50s for most, which will be a little below average for this time of the year. Upper 50s expected around Richland Center, so a little bit warmer there. Then by Monday, a chance for rain for most during the day, holding off until the evening hours around Oshkosh and Amory. Highs expected to linger in the mid to upper 50s for most, a little warmer for western Wisconsin, getting into the low to mid 60s.
Here's something I never thought I would say before, but as we were leaving for dinner last evening, my wife looked out from the driveway as we're pulling out and said, "Our lawn has literally never been as green as it was until this week because of all this late moisture that we're getting." And, you know, the leaves are changing and everything, but the lawns are probably about as green as they've ever been, Jen.
They have, yeah. And like you said, we've been getting quite a bit of moisture here recently, so that's been helping with that.
Very much so. Jennifer, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
You too.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the 3rd Congressional District, and we're going to visit with Eric Wilson from Eau Claire, who announced his campaign for Congress, making him the 5th Democrat who is going to be running in that race in a district that is represented currently by Derek Van Orden. And so, Eric, we appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for joining us here on Up North News Radio.
Yeah, good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
So when you announced your campaign on Tuesday, you can imagine that given some of the names that are already in the race, there were, you know, maybe one or two people that said, "What? that we have five candidates now. And I'm very thankful that you were gracious enough to come in and take the question directly, Eric, with you know, some people in the race with either electoral experience or previous elective experience running in this district. Why are you running, and why should people consider you in next year's primary?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to have multiple perspectives. I think that's part of the benefit of democracy, is we can all jump into a race and see, bring our perspectives to that. And really what I bring is a fresh perspective. I'm not a career politician, but what I do bring is a lot of experience in healthcare, healthcare insurance. I bring experience in the real estate industry. And those are some of the core problems that families are facing here in Wisconsin. Housing costs are out of control. Healthcare continues to go up and is causing more and more issues for people. It's not as accessible. And so we have these systems that have been built on corporate greed and special interests taking advantage of people. And we really need to approach things in a different way. As you can see, there's a lot of chaos going on in Washington.
Oh, without a doubt. And people who are very purposefully, fomenting that chaos. And so you talk about what is basically, private sector experience that you would bring to the race. So I think a voter would then want to know, do you have any prior political experience, past or current, in Democratic Party circles or in progressive groups, or, what other activities you've taken part in before you made the decision to run for Congress?
Yeah, so I have been working with the Eau Claire Democratic Party, chair of the Technology Committee, the chair of the Communications Committee, been working closely with the Chippewa County Democrats as well, and working with the Eau Claire College Democrats, and so have been involved here in Eau Claire in the community.
Okay, and you've got family history from the area as well, as opposed to people always want to know, is this somebody who's moved into the Chippewa Valley fairly recently or not? But you say you have a family here with roots that go back generations.
Yes, generations, five generations. So we have been here for a long time. Understand what's important, understanding that it truly is taking care of your neighbor and community. Mm-hmm. And making sure that those in need are taken care of.
Let's stick with the primary for a bit before we turn to Derek Van Orden. And again, for folks that maybe aren't following the race closely, the way the race unfolded currently is that Rebecca Cook, an entrepreneur from the Eau Claire area, was the first to declare. And she's the only one of the Democratic primary candidates from last year who has declared. She won more counties than any of the other candidates, but Brad Paff won the most votes, and he went on to take on Derek Van Orden. He lost there. He serves as a state senator from the La Crosse area. Tara Johnson, former chair, longtime member of the La Crosse County Board, is now running. And now, most recently, State Representative Katrina Shanklin from Stevens Point is in the race. And there is a gentleman who is attending Harvard Law who says that after he graduates next year, he's going to move to the district and run in the race as well. So with that field being what it is, to just keep it to the primary contest itself, when you have Rebecca Cook, the former candidate, you got these three women, three leaders. They're each from the different population centers of the district. And so where do you think that you would make your mark and your inroads when talking to Democratic voters all across that sprawling third congressional district?
Yeah, I think it's the younger population. As you know, Wisconsin 3 is a lot of colleges, but as well as it's across generations. I have an older dad, and understanding that the issues that he's going through gives me perspective into what we need to do. And it's healthcare, it's education. We need to promote and invest in these things to make life easier for people here in Wisconsin.
And you come into this with a couple of endorsements already. Tim Nordine, president of the Eau Claire School Board, and the former Chippewa County Democratic Chair, Al Holly. So there are already folks that you're getting the endorsement from and trying to make inroads with. Is your activity right now primarily what, electronic, virtual, social media, things like that? Or does it involve what I always refer to as road work already in getting around what is a very large district?
Yes, it's absolutely both. And so it's connecting with people in a digital manner, but it's also going to people's houses, going to meetings, making sure that people know who I am and what I'm doing. And being able to build that, I guess you say, grassroots investment in what we're doing and what I hope to achieve and what I think is important to this district.
So let's get to the incumbent here, and that would be Derek Van Orden, the first-term Republican, who you don't need me to rattle off all the ways that he has provided controversy. I'm a bit more challenged in trying to figure out what he's done in terms of service that you would run against. So tell me your own take on Derek Van Orden. And again, keeping in mind, I mean, any activist Democrat is going to vote against Derek Van Orden, but that's not going to be enough in this district. So what is your message to swing voters, moderate voters, whatever you want to call them, occasional voters? What is your message to them about Derek Van Orden?
Yeah, what we need is fixers. We need fixers in Washington that are willing to address the issues that we have. Derek isn't a fixer. As we've seen, he's part of the problem. He's part of fueling the chaos that is happening in Washington. And he's not taking on big corporations. And like he said, he's walked back on his term limits, which I think are important. He's not doing what he says or said he was going to do. And I think there's an appetite to have someone that is willing to stand up to a bully, not be a bully.
I want to come back to the term limits part of it in just a moment. But when you think of some of Derek Van Orden's tirades, one of them was at the Prairie du Chien Library. He was very upset about a display of books with LGBTQ themes or themes about tolerance. And one of the things that you're running on is about that tolerance and diversity and to stop the bullying from elected officials toward the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about opportunity. We are just hoping to have the same opportunities that everyone else has.
So the term limits, what is it that you mentioned rightfully that Van Orden has already broken his pledge on term limits. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think term limits are important, right? We shouldn't have people that are in power for 30, 40 years. I mean, I think it would fuel progress in people not just focusing on let's get reelected. They actually have to do something if there is a limit on when they're in power and able to do stuff. And so I think it's important to have term limits to really push us forward as a country.
You mentioned in your announcement as well some of your own personal experience with healthcare issues. To me, it is always unfortunate that conservatives sometimes don't embrace issues until it affects them firsthand. Maybe it's a son who's gay, or maybe it's a health scare that they have. You do have real world experience that you can bring into the issue of healthcare in the here and now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I have been on both sides of the healthcare system. In college, I had to have chest surgery. And as you can imagine, as a 19-year-old, that's quite a difficult thing to do during college. And like many families here, I came out of that experience with medical debt. And thankfully was able to work to get that taken care of. But that's not the case for everyone. And so it's like, as a 19-year-old, you're thousands and thousands of dollars in medical debt, and that's how you're supposed to start your career. Or if you're later in life, you don't have the support. Like my father's going through treatment for cancer. He was diagnosed in 2011, and it's been a back and forth battle, but now he has to have monthly treatments. And those shots alone are over $1,000. And it was the same thing for my grandpa back in 2015. He actually wasn't able to pay for the shots that would keep him alive and help him be healthy.
And it amazes me still, and I say it all the time, that we still have that kind of a system in this country. But to do it, we need to make some changes in elected officials. Eric Wilson, new candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. We appreciate the introduction very much. I am sure we will be talking again very soon.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
All right. Thanks, Eric. And when we come back, Mark Jacob is standing by. We'll look at media coverage of this week's big news events after this. You're up north. All right, well, as we often do at 7:33 on Friday mornings, we talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune, author, and we talk frequently about media coverage of the week's events. Although Mark actually started with a little bit of breaking news for me. It was first reported by Lawrence Andrea of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about 30, 35 minutes ago that Congressman Derek Van Orden, who we were discussing in the last segment here, is not in D.C., and he has left for Israel in the middle of the House Republicans being paralyzed over the speaker vote. So again, the Journal Sentinel has details on that. But Mark, good morning. Did you give credit to who you heard say that Van Orden would rather be in a war zone than?
It was Matt Gaetz of Media Matters.
Matt Gaetz, by the way, before I forget, Matt Gaetz has gotten more mileage out of being confused for Matt Gaetz, you know, in his posts and the terrible things that people write. And yet here he is breaking all these great stories, and yet people still confuse him with the right-wing congressman.
Yeah, well, he's funny about it because people will denounce him for being, you know, this right-wing congressman, and he's not. He's actually, Media Matters is a great organization that, you know, fact-checks a lot of stuff on the right. And I really love it. And I thought it was pretty funny for him to say that you'd rather be in a war zone than be, you know, voting on Jim Jordan.
But, you know, to take it to a more serious level here, I mean, there's nothing Derek Van Orden can do in Israel. And so he is really not doing his caucus a favor by abandoning them before today's vote, right?
No, I wonder what that's all about. I mean, is it just that is it just a political play that he wants to, you know, look, you know, so pro-Israel that he'll get more votes or something, you know, next year? It seems like a very odd move. I mean, because as you point out, you know, he's really not going to do anything that's going to, you know, change the war situation over there.
No, so, and it's not like he's part of a group of congressmen. It appears to be just him, which, like I said, raises questions.
Well, you know, it sure looks, Pat, like the Republicans hate being in Congress. It's like they don't like being there. They don't like each other. They don't know what they're doing there. You have this situation with Jim Jordan where people criticize him because he's never gotten a bill passed. I mean, he's been in Congress for what, like 16, 17 years and never gotten a bill passed. And he's running for a speaker. I mean, think about that. And his quote on that is, well, I didn't come to Washington to pass bills. Well, what did you come to Washington for? I mean, it's idiotic. And they look so terrible. I mean, they are terrible. And, you know, it's pretty obvious they've been terrible for a long time. But them looking this inept is really something. And I mean, I can only hope that it kind of lasts, you know, that the impression left right now of ineptitude and just viciousness and you know, threats to the spouses of congressmen who don't vote for Jordan, that kind of thing gets remembered next year. It needs to be.
Yeah, I would hope so. But here's the thing about Jim Jordan and saying that he wants to keep going. He wants to force a third ballot today and so forth. And again, once again, accuse me of jumping, you know, too many moves ahead of things. But given that he said he doesn't want to pass bills, he's there to cut. He's there to basically be human gridlock. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that part of the reason he's trying to do this is to keep Congress gridlocked until it essentially forces a government shutdown, because that's what he and others want.
That may be it. I mean, it's It just, you know, and the thing is, isn't that such a demonstration of the whole, what we've often talked about, the, you know, party over country kind of mentality. And in this case, it's just Jim Jordan over country. I mean, this is just him deciding, you know, that he's going to be, it's either him or nothing. It's, you know, him my way or the highway. And, or maybe, you know, as you say, maybe he really wants the government to come to a screeching halt.
You know, I just
don't understand why, you know, it's like Republicans saying government doesn't work, and then they set out to prove themselves right. But you know, it's just such vandalism.
It is vandalism, and you know what? That's a better word for what I was about to say. You know, to be a chaos agent, because that's kind of what they seek to do now, because that's what undermines public faith in their government, public faith in democracy. To that same end, switching gears here. And again, I'm the one willing to go out on a limb on this. This is about Sidney Powell, the Trump attorney, flipping and taking a plea deal yesterday. And part of it is that she has to testify truthfully against the other co-defendants. Again, maybe I've seen that one scene in The Godfather too many times, but Sidney Powell was so shameless in her support of Trump that I guess I won't be surprised if down the road she doesn't testify truthfully, that she does, again, become an agent of chaos, you know, by intent to, again, undermine people's faith in the judicial system to prosecute that. Again, that's me running a bit far afield, but it's also in keeping with what they've done to delay and obstruct justice as much as possible.
Well, that's the tough thing when you're dealing with a conspiracy like this, whether you're talking about organized crime or the Republican Party in, you know, in 2020 or both. And you're talking about trying to flip people who are bad characters. You know, you have a bunch of people who are part of a criminal conspiracy, and you're trying to pull off a couple of them to testify against the rest of them. Well, they're not good people to start with. So the prosecutors always have trouble, you know, will this witness be credible and all that? And again, could she flip back? Who knows? I mean, you know, she said crazy things. I mean, on TV, they've showed some of the things that she was saying back in the day, you know, just making up stuff. They flip votes. And, you know, she was all part of the whole thing that they were going to blame Hugo Chavez, who had died, you know, 7 years earlier for, you know, conspiring to, you know, to change all these votes. So she's kind of nuts. And so we'll have to see. But boy, she was right in the middle of it. And, you know, if she does testify truthfully, it could be extremely damaging. I mean, I would think that Trump's lawyers have got to be kind of panicky about this.
Here's another just kind of a quick one and done subject that when we talk about how the media covers things, just really frazzled me. And sometimes I feel so bad for my wife when she sees me yelling at the TV. But this was a great example. There was on TV, there was an on-screen graphic this morning that said Social Security cost of living adjustment will be the smallest in years. And I thought, holy cow, you just can't win. Because the reason it's lower is because inflation is down. It was big before. So it's good news that inflation is down, but it's always framed as, oh, it's the smallest benefit increase ever. And, you know, the government's being terrible to you, when the foundation of that is economic good news. I'm not saying that inflation isn't still real, but the framing just sometimes makes you want to tear your hair out.
Well, yeah, right. And you see, you saw the same thing with, you know, this continuing good, strong job market. You know, and you see the New York Times, Washington Post often will, not always, but often will, you know, they'll see something like that and they'll say, oh, this is going to be a big challenge to the Fed, you know, because, I mean, honestly, it's tough to control the economy and to, you know, to adjust. And whenever the job market is really red hot, and as, you know, it is right now, and when people are still spending money. See, that's, again, if we had as bad an economy as the Republicans want people to think, then people wouldn't still be spending money, and they are. And when that happens, those are both things that can contribute to an inflation. So that's why it makes the Fed worry about inflation, and that's why they may raise interest rates. So it's all, you know, squeezing the levers and turning them and figuring out things. So I get that it's true that almost every good news story, you can find a bad news story out of it. But it's just what the media decides to focus on. You're exactly right. The increase in Social Security is based exactly on the rate of inflation. So if it's low, it means it's low inflation, and that's good for everyone, not just for, you know, oldsters like me.
Exactly. Here's another. There's like a whole bunch of one hitters that I wanted to, you know, sprinkle on you today. And this one deals with one of the quotes that President Biden gave on the plane coming back from Israel. And again, this was through a couple of social media accounts that first off gave Biden's actual quote. And it was something along the lines of, you know, people gave me grief that I spend, you know, 3 hours in these rooms meeting like with the victims of terrorism, but that I think it's important to listen to everybody, to hear their story. It was a wonderful quote. What Fox News did yesterday with Kayleigh McEnerney, I think it was, you know, former Trump administration official, who's now a Fox News personality, rolls the tape by saying, well, here's Biden on Air Force One, and you can really see how he might be, you know, impaired, you know, cognitively. And you get Biden, basically it was the windup to this wonderful quote when he said, you know, I was there for about, you know, an hour and a half or so, and he pauses. And the next thing out of his mouth was this great quote, but Fox cut out right before the quote. So all they see is the long pause. It was so amazingly dishonorable, deceptive, whatever you want to call it. And I mean, it is Fox 101, but right. I think sometimes it's important to give the specific examples of how dastardly some people can be.
Well, yeah, right. And it's got news in its name. So I can forgive some people for initially thinking that Fox News is news. It is not news. It's not journalism. It's not. It's right-wing disinformation. And its only goal is, well, it's got two goals. One, to make money, and another thing to increase its power and influence by, you know, by giving the party line for the MAGA right. And so they're not going to be honest about anything. You know, and you saw like Laura Ingraham, who was like for days now, she's been, ever since Biden went to Israel, she's been denouncing it. She's been saying, well, he should have stayed home. You know, those Israelis, they have a lot of other things to worry about rather than having a president there. Oh, well, give me a break. You got to know that if it had been flipped, she would have been on the, well, why hasn't Biden gone to Israel yet? Kind of camp. I mean, it's there's really no way for him to win. And when you look at it, you look at how Biden conducts foreign policy versus how Trump did. And you know, Biden, you know, very empathetic, shows up, makes speeches, makes statements, you know, and meets with victims. You know, Trump hated meeting with victims of tragedies. He hated that. He didn't want to go to the cemetery because those were all suckers and losers. You know, the military cemetery. I mean, Trump hates that kind of stuff. He'd much rather be on the golf course, and it shows.
Yeah, very much so. Last thing I want to hit, and this is extremely important from a media coverage standpoint, the hospital blast in Gaza. And it's like, oh, nobody should ever admit that they don't know something. Right. You should always say everything with confidence. Saying things with confidence was exactly the wrong thing to do this week by newsrooms.
Yeah, and that's tough. And some news organizations really got wrapped because, you know, they immediately said, you know, Hamas said that this you know, that the Israelis had bombed this hospital, and you know, they probably didn't. Who knows? I mean, at this point, you know, you're going to believe the Israeli military, and or you're going to believe Hamas, or the third option is to decide that you're not sure. And, you know, and in news media, this if you're not sure, it's okay to say you're not sure, or to quote both sides and, you know, and to let it be figured out. You know, Pat, I'm not saying that, you know, the U.S. government is less credible or as credible as Hamas. Hamas is not very credible. Hamas is an awful organization that, you know, that murdered 1,000 or more Israelis in a single day, you know, just viciously. And so, you know, I'm not about to believe them. The real problem is you don't have hardly any journalists or any journalists in Gaza. I mean, it's very dangerous, and they're not allowed in. So so where do we get our news? It's just, what I'm saying is that instead of saying, well, the Hamas said that this happened this way, it's really better to say, you know, that both sides, what they said, and say that we couldn't independently verify things. And just to say, I'm not saying that I'm going to believe Israel on everything or the U.S. government on everything. I mean, I remember the Iraq War. I remember the U.S. government lying about, you know, about intelligence before the Iraq War. So, you know, it's okay to say you're not sure and to disbelieve official sources.
Yeah. Again, the skepticism is kind of the coin of the realm of journalism, at least until you actually verify things. Mark Jacob, as always, appreciate all your insight. You can catch him on Twitter and wherever else things go when that turkey finally sinks, but you can catch him over there. Mark, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
You too.
All right. When we come back, let's see. Dan Schumacher's off this week, so we've asked Jimmy Koska from Civic Media to step on in and tell us about the Level 1 WIAA State High School Football Playoffs getting underway today and tonight. So that is coming up next here. You're up north. Hey, I forgot to mention this whole time, although the microphone is kind of hiding it. It's rare that a middle-aged man will show off his torso, you know, on live video. But those folks watching on the video screen going, what's he wearing? I'm wearing the Am I Up North Yet t-shirt. And you can get Up North News t-shirts over at upnorthnewswi.com. Just click on store in the top banner. Well, we've got a whole new wave of high school action taking place starting today and tonight as the state high school football playoffs get underway. And Jimmy Koska is joining us now to tell us all about the action. We often talk about Chad Holmes because it feels like he's covering multiple games at once. But we've got Jimmy and a whole lot of other very dedicated people who are following these games. Jimmy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Great to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you along here as well. Let's start by explaining kind of the infrastructure of it first, if you will, that, you know, before you get to the state finals, there are you basically have to jump through four other hoops, although they're referred to as levels, right? So we got levels, is it 1 through 4?
Yeah, so levels 1 through 4 and then the state finals. 7 divisions, 224 teams get in, 14 make it to state. 7 champions and 11 player football. There's also an 8-player football tournament that is 16 teams and then one champion from that bracket as well.
Okay, so 200 some teams. So we're not going to have time to go through all of those today. I don't think
not 9 minutes. No.
do we have any surprises like defending champions or is there anything like that we know of, or is it when it's level one, you really can't tell who's going to break out into those later rounds?
You know, level one is interesting because typically the only matchups that get real close are going to be like the 5-4 seeded matchups. Since they've gone to computer seeding, there haven't really been a lot of like 8-1 upsets in the first round. Round one tends to be very chalky. You get the occasional 7-2. You get the occasional rematch from like a week 9 game or a previous meeting in the season. You get a few of those throughout the season, but level one usually tends to be pretty lacking in surprises. Really, the playoffs for me, in my mind, when you get to see some of the bigger showdowns, are going to be level three, which would be like the state quarterfinals, because then you're matching up the top, usually the top two or two of the top 3 or 4 seeded teams. And frequently what happens when these playoffs begin is that teams from the same conference get kind of pooled in the same 8-team grouping. So then those teams meet in sort of a unofficial conference tournament, if you will. So you get some really classic rematches. And in some cases, you even get matchups of undefeated teams as early as level three. And that's really where the fun begins, in my mind. Not that levels 1 and 2 don't have their entertainment, but once you eliminate a lot of the teams from the field, you essentially cut the field by 3/4. I think that's where things get really interesting. And you see some of the top teams really start to emerge.
Okay. So I've called up on one of my 50 browsers, it feels like, browser windows that I have open right here, called up the brackets. And again, we talk about doing, you know, the bracket challenges in March for March Madness. Not that we're not encouraging betting on high school sports. You can't possibly with all of these brackets here and everything that's here. Do you want to tell us about particular games that you are following or that, you know, the parts of the Civic Media audience might be following?
I think for Civic Media, one of the great things about our company is that we're covering nearly 10 games tonight, right? We have games on virtually every market in the company this week. So depending on where you're listening to this from, the station you're on more than likely has a game coming up tonight. In northwestern Wisconsin all the way to southeastern Wisconsin, you're going to find you're going to find a great matchup. I think in these first rounds, what I look for personally are like rematches from the season. And I coached in small school football this year. So I'm interested to see, you know, like in Division VII, a rematch between River Ridge and Highland in southwestern Wisconsin. This is WRCO's neck of the woods. And seeing a matchup of a game that was decided by 1 point in week one, having that as a playoff opener, I think is really interesting. So, you know, I those are the matchups I look for. There are several rematches. You know, there are pods that are just like entire conferences are dropped into 1-8 pods. So you do get those rematches in the first couple of rounds. As far as specific matchups in the first round, I think you can look through pretty much any bracket of the state, and there's going to be one or two locally that kind of call out to you. And those typically involve teams that are either in the same conference or teams that and they try to avoid that to some degree, but they're either going to be teams in the same conference or they're going to be teams that are very close together. Maybe they were members of the same conference before realignment 4 years ago, and now they get a chance to match up in the first round of the playoffs. So in terms of like a specific series of matchups, I don't know that I have any favorites, but I do enjoy the rematches because I think especially in high school football, things change so drastically week to week that a second matchup between two teams doesn't usually, in my experience, go the same way the first one did.
Sure. I mean, for my own standpoint, being in Chippewa Falls, of course, I call up the, you know, level one bracket for, you know, for Division One. And right there, the first one is Hudson versus Chippewa Falls. That's at Hudson. And you, like you said, a lot of them are close together, though I notice there's one here where Milwaukee Marshall Co-op takes on De Pere. And all it says is at Jimmy Banks Stadium. So I don't know if that's in Milwaukee, if De Pere has to travel all the way there. But by and large, are these are home games for the lower seeds?
So, yeah, the higher seeds, 1 through 4. Seeds, yeah. Yep. They get to host the game. So, mm-hmm. and with the computer seeding, before they put in the computer seeding, coaches would actually argue for matchups based on proximity, right? So maybe you deserved a 3 seed. But you would take the 4 seed because it meant you didn't have to, you know, your opponent didn't have to travel or whatever. It would usually happen in lower seeds. You know, Jimmy Banks Stadium, that's the former Custer Stadium in Milwaukee. Okay. Milwaukee Public Schools actually have 5 home games they're hosting, but only 4 stadiums to do it. So they actually have a doubleheader at one of the stadiums this week. Yep, you mentioned Chippewa Falls Hudson. You know, the crazy realignment that's happening in northwestern Wisconsin is actually splitting apart a number of historic rivalries. You know, the Eau Claire schools are getting grouped in with some of the central Wisconsin schools. That actually ends their non-conference rivalries with the La Crosse schools, former members of the same conference years ago that have played non-conference for years. And if as far back as I've covered sports in the Chippewa Valley when I worked there, it is incredible to see, though, that they found creative ways to keep some of these historic rivalries alive in the era of realignment. And now you get to see a bit of that here in the first round of the playoffs.
It's funny you mentioned realignment because we've talked about it in terms of the NCAA, where it's like, what do conferences even mean anymore when your conference is now border to border? I'd better not run out of time before I hit some of the other highlights here. Badger football is at Illinois 2:30 tomorrow on FS1. The number one ranked Badger women's hockey team is at home against Bemidji State, 7 o'clock tonight. The number one ranked women's volleyball team has their big match against number 2 Nebraska tomorrow night at 7 in Lincoln, and that will be on the Big Ten Network. The men's hockey team is at Michigan Tech. They play this evening at 6. Houston has tied up the National League Championship Series with the Texas Rangers, and the Phillies lead In the American League, Houston and Texas are tied up at 2 games apiece. In the National League, game 4 is tonight in Arizona. The Phillies lead that series 2-1. Packers at Denver, Sunday, 3:25. I got 10 seconds to leave it at that. Jimmy, Packers, Broncos, Packers getting back on track this week?
Think so. Broncos have not looked good at all. They just haven't looked good.
Boy, they have not. So if you can't get it done here, Packers, you're in big trouble. Hey, Jimmy, thanks for all the information. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. Thank you. You have a great weekend. All of you have a wonderful weekend as well. Thanks for joining us. Again, follow what we do at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday morning.